Where Trails Divide by Tom W. Blackburn. The town lay peacefully along the one street that drifted carelessly beneath the cottonwoods. Old Mexico, with her mystery and tolerance of all breeds of silent men, lay a short, swift ride to the south. Cordobal was quiet, a little eddy off the outlaw trail reaching down from the Texas grass ranges to the hidden markets for stolen stock in Old Mexico. Maybe it was the quiet of Cordobal that leathery, stone-faced Kirk Brandon liked, but some folks thought it was something else. Kirk Brandon knew the answer, but as with all that concerned his own past, he kept a shut mouth. Now he stood idly at the Buckhorn Bar, a weathered man, both in spirit and saddle-toughened body. His guns hung low, and his eye was level. He knew good beef, and who raised it. His head was cocked slightly forward as he listened to the quiet on the street outside. That quiet meant something now. He shifted position and lounged more easily, for Brandon was a patient man and a clever one.
Them buggies will be Johnny Carter taking his last ride, I reckon.
Brandon kept his gaze riveted to the back bar mirror before him.
Johnny died just about as thick-headed as he lived. He rid some mighty scary trails after Texas beef for the Mexies, before his wife drug him back to his place out of town. And he was lucky to come back from the Owl Hoot with no stronger brand on him than they was. Then plumb fool-like, he lets Cochise and his last ten of the Vengeance Patchy side him after dark off his own spread. Any gent who take them chances deserve the arrow in his throat Johnny collected. And him with a wife and kid.
The barkeep paused expectantly. Talk of Texas beef on border trails was nothing to make in hearing of tall Kirk Brandon. Brandon recognized the bait and passed it up. Then he turned, walked out the door, and stopped. Brandon's eyes focused on the somber procession before him. Three black buggies, a shiny hearse, two horsemen, and a stray dog. Johnny Carter made his last trip down this familiar street with little enough fanfare. But one figure alone out of the scene caught the watching man's eyes. The tall figure of a proud woman in one of the buggies. She sat erect and calm in the face of her grief. Her eyes were fastened on the black vehicle ahead. It was only when Kirk became aware of her gaze turning upon him that he suddenly felt detached from all this, a stranger looking at something he didn't understand. Down Biscato Way, in the Mexican camp where Kirk Brandon's trail wolves wound up their wide-looping drives for stock, quarrels came and went. Many more men died than ever rode a black hearse down the one street of Cordobal. But Brandon had never before seen a woman with the courage to match her grief. He was thinking about that woman when he re-entered the saloon. The barkeep eyed him strangely again. Finally, a sympathetic smile crossed his deep-veined face. He shoved a bottle forward quietly.
This one's on the house, Brandon. I'm just remembering you and Johnny Carter there was once saddlemates.
Brandon's colorless eyes fixed those of the man behind the bar unseeingly.
Yeah.
He walked out of the Buckhorn without a glance at the label on the bottle set before him. When he was in Cordobal, as infrequently he was, there were but two places where Kirk Brandon might be found. One was in front of a bottle of 100-proof bourbon at the Buckhorn. The other was his corner room on the second floor of the hotel. Having quitted one, he went now directly to the other, his mind still occupied on the woman in the buggy. It had been a picture to tighten a man's throat, seeing her ride that procession with her lovely face set in calm acceptance of the blow that was hers. Molly had always loved Johnny Carter, and Brandon remembered this bitterly. But she had always been like that, with courage to spare. When her boy was born, Johnny had been in Biscato, delivering a turkey track herd to his tall, leather-faced partner. Molly had had her baby all alone in the sod shanty that had been on the Carter place in those days. But her eyes had been bright with welcome when Johnny came home, drunk and ashamed. Molly loved that kid of hers, too. When folks in Cordobal started talking about raising a kid to be a rustler, to follow in the footsteps of his dad and Kirk Brandon, Molly had acted calmly. She had pulled Johnny home and set him to tending beef with his own iron. Kirk had understood how it was, and he had let Johnny go. For sooner or later on the brush trail, Johnny would find trouble somewhere, and he might bring it back with him to Boscato. The rest Molly had done was something else again. The kid had been sent north to school in Santa Fe with only letters to keep him near his mother. And Molly had sent him without showing a tear, though it must have torn her heart out to do it. The kid stayed, learning to be honest, learning out of books a more honorable trade than his dad could teach him. And Molly had turned toward the task of earning a new reputation for Johnny, winning for him in Cordobal the name of an honest rancher. That she had never entirely succeeded was no sign she had not fought grimly for it. And now... Well, that ride down the street behind a hearse was the beginning of more troubles and another more drastic test of Molly's courage. That school in Santa Fe cost money, and Johnny Carter hadn't been a very good cowman, just as in earlier years, midnight hops across the border had brought him but little silver. A strange, deep glow was in Kirk Brandon's eyes. Many a lost hope deal had come at last to the hands of this man who waited wisely and played his hand as his cards were dealt to him. He crossed the room to his bureau and took out a small case. From within, he took two slips of paper and a thin, dry grin crossed his face. He looked at the two notes for $5,000 each, long overdue. In Boscato, they said that Brandon had been a fool to have let Johnny Carter have the money, but Johnny had been his partner once, and now it all didn't seem foolish. A memory of Molly Carter as she had been 10 years ago when he and Johnny were both courting her was in Brandon's mind. Molly had not changed much. She still was a likely queen for a borderland empire of renegades down in Boscato. For a little while, Kirk thought of the Carter place beyond the town, of riding out there. Then he shrugged. He was older now, and he'd learned patience. Fortune and a woman must be won slowly and with consummate cleverness. With steady hand, he scrawled "Paid" across the notes and sealed them in an envelope. In a bold block script, he addressed the packet to the man Cordobal was burying today. When he went out onto the street, Peonito, squatting in the dust, took a quarter from his hand and carried the envelope into the post office. In half an hour, Kirk was riding south. He rode hard and kept a wide country until he breasted the river. Cochise, the dread Apache leader, and the last 10 still ranged those breaks, seeking their tithe in white blood from lone riders for a wrong none but the Apaches remembered. And Kirk Brandon never made the mistakes that had hounded Johnny Carter. After crossing over into Mexico with the Rio between himself and Cochise's hunting ground, tall Kirk Brandon's grim face split in a confident smile. For once, Molly's courage would have no play. She had been the business head at the Carter Ranch too long not to know that Johnny's biggest creditor, with a generosity she could not believe of him, had freely relieved her of her most pressing financial problem. Molly would think much about this and about the man who had done it. Brandon rode easily now, for later he would return. But it was 3 months before messengers from the north brought the news to Boscato and told Kirk Brandon rode hard again. And this time he forsook the Buckhorn to visit Sadovan's bank. Sadovan was old, and folks said he knew the thoughts of every man who faced him. But Kirk Brandon knew this was a lie. None knew what turned within his own mind save himself.
I'm after cash this trip, Sadovan. I'll clean my account out, in bills if you got it.
The banker looked surprised. His lined old face screwed tighter and he leaned forward.
You quitting at last, Brandon? Major pile, eh?
I'm closing a deal this trip, Sadovan, that I've been working on for 10 long years. I'm making a bid for the thing I've wanted most since I first hit the Big Bend. If my bid is best, I want the green to back it.
The banker turned toward the vault, and later came the crisp rustle of fresh bills counted in practiced hands. Directly, he came into the office with a brown square envelope, which he thrust into Brandon's hands.
Well, no deal west of St. Joe's worth the risk of toting $30,000 in cash on your belly, but you know that. Now I got to ride to Silver City for more cash to meet the construction payroll on the railroad at Lima Crossing come the end of the month.
But Kirk Brandon was gone onto the street, with Banker Sadovan's complaint only a vague whine behind him. In moments, he was facing another man, his Segundo from Buscado, in his hotel room. The Segundo had been well informed. The brown envelope was opened and a pad of bills removed. Brandon watched his man go out into the hall with the bills in his pocket. Then he sat down to wait. Time dragged slowly, and his mind drifted back over years now gone into the past which had been his humble beginning. Two Texas drifters had hit the Big Bend together, riding the high trails with posse thunder in their ears, for a man lay dead at Silver City, and his friends had claimed murder. Kirk remembered that shot, a clean one through the throat of a pasty-faced tinhorn. It had been Johnny Carter who was at the table. It was Johnny's thick wits which had called the tinhorn's double deal long before Brandon was prepared to capitalize on his own previous knowledge of it. Kirk had been across the room, his back turned, when he heard Johnny's startled cry of alarm. Yet Kirk had still beaten the gambler by a wide margin. The trouble was, there'd been too much speed in Brandon's draw, for he was tallied a gunman, maybe masquerading under an unknown name, and the law came baying after them. They had worked south and finally were forced to cross the border. Here Kirk saw opportunity for a man with brains. So he had bought, with what money they had, the piece of land outside of Cordobal, which became the Carter place. With that as a blind, things had gone well, driving Texas cattle south for Mexican sale. A dry humor was in Brandon tonight. That Carter place had been good land. Had a man who understood his business ranched that piece, it would have made money, almost as much as the camp at Buscado. But it had been Johnny's lot to get that ranch, as it had been Kirk's choice to rod Buscado and its tough cattle-rustling renegades. It had also been Johnny's lot with his wide blue eyes and boyish carelessness to win Molly Haskins. But not for keeps. For Kirk Brandon had learned the way a strong man may win from the world what he wants. And for 10 years, Kirk Brandon had wanted Molly Carter. Tonight, he knew he was close. Once, he got up from his seat and moved nervously to the window. He had planned carefully. It was not in him to believe he might have been wrong somewhere along the line of reasoning that had led up to tonight. She would come, he was certain of that. For Molly Carter was a proud woman and fought her own way. He took a long cigarro from a battered case and chewed it viciously. But in the end, Molly did come. She was dressed in the denim blouse and the divided skirt of a woman who had much riding to do. She carried a folio under her arm, and through the tired wrinkles of strain about her eyes, somehow a light of happiness showed. For a moment, Brandon believed he had won, hands elbow high, without need of a showdown. But he soon saw he was wrong. Molly had never laid down a hand in her life, and she intended to play out this one.
I was hoping to see you, Molly. These things are hard, I reckon. Johnny was... well, if I could help.
Carefully he framed that speech, and carefully he watched its effect. The pleasure faded from Molly's eyes, and a puzzled look crept into them. She leaned forward, her hand resting on his.
Help, Kirk? I got those canceled notes. Johnny never had $1,000 at one time, let alone 10 to pay off notes with. Was that your way of helping?
That was business, Molly. Let's say I owe Johnny those cancellations.
A week ago, I advertised my stock for sale. Sadovan had a small note on the land out at the place, and I had to let him take it. The cattle were all I had left to meet the others Johnny owed. The beef market is in the worst slump in 12 years, yet a bidder took my stuff for 3 times what it's worth. I'm broke now, but every man in town is square with Johnny Carter.
Kirk leaned back in his chair. A smile crossed his face, a bland effort at naturalness. With $30,000 in cash and Molly at Boscato, an empty life would be full. 10 years might suddenly be forgotten.
That was luck that you deserve, Molly. Kind of good luck you've won by your efforts.
Not good luck, Kirk. Not even luck. Some folks say it is. Some folks say it's bad luck for me. Word got round that the bidder was your man.
Brandon gazed at her.
More help, Kirk? I know you, Kirk Brandon. Sometimes I think I know you better than I ever did Johnny Carter. You never helped man, woman, or beast in your life. Some have been helped through you, but only because through them you made a deal. You were really working for Kirk Brandon every minute of your life, and that's what this is, isn't it, Kirk? A deal.
Still, Brandon made no answer. Too many words had ruined many an otherwise sound transaction.
You knew I couldn't refuse the return of those notes. You knew I had to take the best price I could get for those cattle. You knew that when it was all done, I still had my boy at school in Santa Fe, that I still had hopes of sending him east to college, of making a fine lawyer out of him. And I reckon, Kirk Brandon, you know me as well as I know you. Your bid tops anything I had dreamed of. What is it you want, Kirk?
It's you, Molly.
Yes, I suppose it is me you want. For 10 years I've known you've kept this on your mind. Now you'd take me south to your place at Boscato. And I'd have those things you promised me the night I told you I was going to marry Johnny Carter. You've been a strong man, Kirk, where Johnny was weak. You have money where he had debts. But it was you who chose Boscato and the Renegades to ranching, and Johnny only followed you. And when you go, you'll leave nothing behind you. For I loved Johnny Carter. You understand that, Kirk?
Brandon nodded.
I packed tonight before I came in, Kirk. I was leaving Cordoball. My bag is at the stage station. Maybe I hoped your bid was for something else. Maybe I knew it was for me. It doesn't matter. But what about my boy?
Tall Kirk Brandon rose to his feet. He took up the brown envelope with Sadovan's greenback swatting its sides.
Your stock cost me $10,000. There's plenty more.
Will there always be plenty? For him?
Brandon nodded as he opened the door. 10 miles south of Cordoball, pounding along through the brakes behind a livery team in one of the three black buggies which traveled in Johnny Carter's last ride, Kirk Brandon felt a strange sweat upon him. The first flush of pride in the presence of Molly beside him was gone. Some of the bitterness of 10 long years came back to sicken him. This was to have been his greatest coup, yet it left him empty. Molly was there, sure, like she always was, with courage to spare. Suddenly, he knew who was the stronger, and the answer brought him no pleasure. This woman beside him was sworn to stay at his side as eternally as she had once been to his partner. But there was no solemn ceremony to recall the date in happiness through the years. She was as beautiful as the day the two Texas drifters had first sighted her on the streets of Cordoball, but duty and not desire dictated her presence. 10 years ago, he had whispered of a white-walled hacienda below the Rio Grande, of music and moonlight and broad herds bearing his own iron. Now he might build the hacienda, but nothing could change Boscato. It would always be the hangout of the border-hopping renegades who had called Kirk Brandon their jefe. Presently, Molly saw the heavy creases ridging his forehead and laid her hand across his arm.
Don't worry, Kirk. Once you were very fond of me. I know that now. Maybe it will come back to you just like it was, and I will be there. The instincts of a great cowman are in you, and after we're married, we will live as you once planned, with money and the respect of friends. And my boy will have his chance. I can spare him, as I have before, to let him make something of himself that the borderland could never produce. We'll all be happy.
Brandon hunched lower in the seat. The brown envelope in his pocket gouged his ribs. He took it out and laid it on the seat between them. The instincts of a great cowman, Molly had said. Grim humor seized him, and suddenly he knew. This was the greatest trial of all for the woman beside him. Grief and the collapse of all she'd ever known meant nothing to the hurt brought by this bargain he had forced upon her. Yet chin up and warmth in her eyes for him, she was traveling south to the renegade town she hated. What did all this mean to him? For 10 years, bitterness had been his lot because a weakling and a fool had won the single thing he wanted most from the world. Now he had gained what he desired because he was the stronger and had learned to wait. The rest was something beyond the ken of a hard man. Over the rise ahead, the trail split wide. One thin white line laced across the river like an accusing arrow toward Buscado, and the other led to Cordobal by a route more direct than the one they traveled. With lips set grimly in anger against this parade of vagrant thoughts and self-accusations which made his victory an empty thing, Brandon put the flying team against the sharpness of the rise. And as the buggy rocked up, a sudden hell flared behind them. Kirk's thick-muscled arm sent new speed to the animals ahead. Molly twisted half about in the seat to stare at the mad visions trailing them.
Near a dozen men.
Cochise in the last 10.
Take the river road, Kirk. Cochise raids this side only. We've got enough lead on them. We can make it. We've got to. It means so much.
But Kirk Brandon did not hear. He was climbing down from the buggy, a Winchester in his arms. He was shoving a brown paper package more securely into a fold in the cushion of the seat, and then he was staring at the vision in the buggy above him. Molly Carter was tired. She had almost made a mistake, a more terrible mistake than her life with Johnny Carter could have ever led her into. This realization put a new power in Brandon. For a few moments, the crest of the rise they had just topped would shelter them from the view of Cochise and his charging savages.
Take these.
Brandon threw the lines of the wall-eyed team up into Molly's lap.
Goodbye, Molly. The boy needs you more. Take the north trail and drive like hell.
His palm struck smartly on the rump of the near horse. Yeah! Molly's white face became a fast receding cameo of surprise against the backdrop of the night. His hand arced up in a salute of farewell.
Goodbye, Molly!
Brandon stared after her for a fraction of a second, with the sudden feeling that somehow the emptiness within him had been filled. Then he took his rifle in his hands. He knelt by the side of the trail and waited.